Welcome back into Sports Talk, folks. We are here getting ready for some audio from Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis, who spoke today as the Saints had their end-of-season press conferences. Before we get into that, just want to give you another update on the Pelicans score. You can hear the game over on 870 AM right now. Hawks up 57-42, about 4 minutes till the half over in the ATL. Back to the black and gold. We know that a lot of hope going into next season with this team. We saw them win four of the last five games. The rookie quarterback seems to be the guy of the future for them, and the new head coach in place. Everyone's rallying around the voice of Kellen Moore. Mickey Loomis, Kellen Moore addressed the media today. Here's a little bit of it. I chopped it down. You heard it earlier here on Sports Talk 11 a.m. We had it live for you. Here is a trimmed down version with some of the juicy parts that you can hear. Kellen Moore, Mickey Loomis, right here on WWL.
Is there a balance to strike between having like a young team, a young core, but also like an extremely winnable division? Like, how do you like fall on those things between like building the young core versus like you can win the NFC South possibly, you know, next year?
Yeah. Well, I think all of us, you know, every guy with every team, whether it's a coach or GM, thinks, you know, they have a vision for how they can win their division, regardless of how strong or weak, you know, you may think it is. So we're going to approach it the same way. Hey, how do we improve enough to win the division? And we don't want to just win the division. I mean, we don't want to be an 8-8 or 8-9 winning team in a division. We want to win the division, be dominant, and have a chance to make a run in the playoffs. So that's what our goal is going to be.
Without knowing like your full history, I mean, it's been at least a very, very long time since you're like building around a rookie contract, a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what sort of advantages does that give you from your perspective?
Yeah, it's just easier to manage your resources. I don't know if it's easy. I don't know if easier is the right word, but you have some leeway to manage resources a little bit. But you still have to make really good decisions. Yeah, you know, I think it's pretty well documented that teams that have a quarterback on a rookie deal have been able to do some things and have some success. And so part of that is just building your roster and managing it over, you know, the 2-3-4 year period that you're facing. And it's just a different equation. It's a different math equation, really.
Mickey, along these team-building lines, I mean, we've had this session so many years in the past where you don't like the word rebuilding or like the complete teardown or whatever. Did you adjust, like, your willingness to embrace that? I mean, there were obviously some signs, trading Rashid Shaheed, trading for Jalen Polk, mm-hmm. all the rookies who played and stuff. Did you find yourself even leaning more into that than you expected?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say that's true.
And what led to it and what did you like about it, I guess, as you were going through it?
Yeah, I think the beginning of that was just Derek not being able to play this year. You know, that's the beginning of it. And then, you know, you look at, okay, we're going to have a young quarterback and there's going to be a lot of development. And so how can we develop the rest of the team along with his development so that, you know, we marry this timeline of his improvement and the things that we're going to need to be able to do to support him, you know, with a really good defense, with, you know, a good run game. So those are the kinds of things you keep in mind.
And then how about along those lines, Kellen, was it always your coaching philosophy to play guys like Quincy Riley and Danny Stutzman and Jonas Sanker as early as you did, or did that come from conversations about, hey, this looks like the direction of this team right now?
I think the important thing about that is that those guys were ready when the opportunity presented themselves, and no timelines are going to be the same. You know, felt like, you know, Tyler's development was a great example of that, of his willingness to get better through an entire season. You know, Quincy kind of had an opportunity through injury to hop in there. Danny kind of was a guy that I think is a great example of just being a really talented player that we feel great about and find different roles and different opportunities where he can get on the field. And so a lot of these timelines were different, but I think it was important to see these guys play and have exposure. And I thought a lot of these guys took advantage of the opportunity.
How did you see Kevin just kind of grow and develop as a coach?
I haven't thought about it in that term, but listen, I think he's done an excellent job. And under some really difficult circumstances, you know, we hired Kellen under a set of circumstances relative to the quarterback, and then that changed dramatically. And, man, he didn't bat an eye. He just, okay, what's the next step that we have to do, and how do we attack it? And that was impressive right from the beginning. And then during the course of the season, obviously there's circumstances and things that come up during the course of the year that you can think you're prepared for, but you're really not because you haven't been put in that position. And I think in virtually every case, he handled it really well. And so that's been exciting to see.
Colin, is there anything from this season that was super instructive for you? Is there any sort of stuff you went through this year where you kind of identified, like, I need to change my process here or anything like that?
Oh, no question. I think that's the beauty of what we're going through right now is you know, Mickey's kind of alluding to this whole off-season process. It's just a really awesome opportunity to grow as a team, certainly myself individually, to just go back through the entire season, our entire process from the off-season program to how we went through the draft process, all the way leading into the season. And so there's definitely opportunities to grow, get better. I feel like credit to our guys, again, like we've said a lot, the people that we have in this building are really special. And I think that's certainly the foundation of this, you know, from the connection between the personnel department, the coaching, everyone else that works in this building from a day-to-day process, the players, the buy-in, the connection, I think is really, really special. And so if you start there and just keep getting better, we'll be on the right path.
How much does that help you to just know that you can brainstorm around pieces that the ones that you have now are going to be there? Because I assume that changed on you last year, too, that you're kind of envisioning one thing and you have to adjust. Like, just knowing some stuff settled, like, does that help you just with what you're doing?
I think it's a great opportunity in the offseason to have some solidified, you know, guys in place that, you know, certainly you can build around. And I think that's what's great. You know, we have a season of plenty of highs and lows, a lot of good film out there, a lot of good things that we can improve on. And we get to go through this thing collectively as a group and kind of paint the picture of what this thing needs to look like moving forward. And so, you know, coaches certainly will do a lot of that. Players will be a part of that process as we go through this. And there's a lot of excitement around that.
Last year when you got hired, singled out certain players, and Alvin was one of them. Mm-hmm. Do you still have the same belief? You know, obviously people say, oh, a running back over 30, you know, what's happened the last few years, is it more injury and circumstances? Like, do you still have the same belief in Alvin?
Yeah, I love Alvin. What Alvin's meant to this organization has been awesome. He's come in, he's put in a ton of work. Obviously, these seasons all take different paths, and, you know, he's had to navigate an injury. And so, you know, the most important thing for him is just to get healthy and be back to his self. And so, you know, he's done a really good job of leading this group and providing that leadership. And so, you know, excited for him.
What are your impressions, Mickey, overall of the rookie class, the way that Quincy stepped up, the way that Devin, when he was healthy, was Tyler Shuck, Kelvin Banks, and everyone included?
Yeah, I think all of us would say we're pretty excited about the group as a whole. The things that they did, sometimes under different circumstances, Kelvin coming in, moving right to left tackle. You know, he had some really good flashes during the course of the season. Obviously, there's room for improvement. Tyler, what he's done, you know, that's been the focal point, I think, in the media about Tyler, but what Jonas Anker and even Devin Neal coming in, Quincy, Danny Stutzman. I mean, all these guys have really stepped up and done a great job. They've been professional about the way they've approached their craft. Even Vernon Broughton, who, you know, we didn't get a chance to see a lot of because he got hurt pretty early. I think we're excited about his prospects. Maliki at tight end. Fidel, I mean, all of them, just to a man, I think we're really excited about this class and have a lot of high hopes for them going forward.
It was one of your better classes in a while. Was there anything that you identified in your process to give those players that changed from how you guys were doing things, or is it, you know, the introduction of the new coaching staff to get their input? Like, what do you think kind of led to a better hit rate on?
Yeah, look, we've had some really great classes, you know, 2006, 2017 come immediately to mind, but there's been some other ones as well. So, you know, it's going to, you know, you're going to have years where, man, it seems like everyone's working out and doing well. And this is early, you know, we shouldn't be judging our draft class after 1 year. We need to wait a few years, but we're pretty optimistic at this point. And, you know, some of that's circumstantial, like, you know, Jonas got his opportunity. Quincy got their opportunity because of injuries and circumstance. And so sometimes, you know, you have years where you have draft picks that don't get those opportunities. And so it takes a while for them to be able to perform. So, but we're excited about it is the bottom line.
How would you describe working with Brandon Staley and the job he did, especially once Chase Young came back in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I just give a ton of credit to our defensive staff, you know, you can see the improvement, like Mickey was saying, throughout the season. Their ability to connect, you know, it was a staff that a lot of people from different places. And so getting together and coming together and getting alignment, I thought was critical. And I thought they just did an excellent job of that. And their adaptability. I thought they did a really good job as the season progressed. Adaptability, willingness to adjust, based off kind of matchups and personnel and all that fun stuff. But we got a bunch of really good people, and so I felt great about it.
Several players, veteran or otherwise, have kind of expressed a desire to be a part of what's being built here. What does that mean to you, and how do you go about creating sort of that environment that players want to be a part of?
Yeah, no, I certainly think it comes down to people. It comes down to having really, really good people in the building, which certainly I think from an evaluation process we've just put a ton of emphasis in for a number of years, and that's allowed us to have the type of locker room we have. And then just the consistency of how our players, how our coaches, how everyone operates from a day-to-day basis, I think hopefully it creates an environment that allows everyone to be their best.
Callan, Cam DeMar have already said they want to play in 2026. Have you talked to Taysom about whether he wants to play in 2026 or retirement possibility?
We'll talk through all that process. I think for all these players, I think the goal really is, I'm just appreciative of their work. That's the most important thing. And then the offseason is the offseason for a reason. You let the emotions get away from all these seasons and all that sort of stuff, and then take some time. And, we'll have plenty of discussions, with everyone.
What is kind of the timeline for y'all's sort of evaluation process this year? Kind of take a week away, and then how do you plan to do it?
Yeah, same. We're going to, get the next 10 days, and I think Kellen's letting his staff, take the next 10 days or so. They'll come back and we'll walk through the evaluations, their evaluations of the players, and then from that we'll start generating our off-season plan.
Mickey, what role do you think patience and not being overly reactionary has played in you building this thing possibly three times now over the last couple of decades, just not overreacting to the noise and giving guys time to do their job and grow, and maybe not even pushing hey, you got to get the young quarterback in there like some teams do, How much do you think that helps with building this organization?
How much does it help? I don't know that I can answer that. That's just, that's really, I probably am overly patient. Sometimes, sometimes your greatest strengths become become a weakness. And so I'm really patient, I feel like. And, whether it helps or not, hopefully it does. I think it does. But, I'll continue to be that way. Again, we're excited about Tyler. You're all excited about Tyler. We're excited about Tyler. But we have to remember that he hasn't had 17 starts yet. And so we're going to go into next season with these high expectations. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we also have to temper that by the fact that he's a second-year quarterback and he's had less than a full season of starts. So we got to keep that in mind as we go forward, that there's building blocks here. And we cannot skip any steps.
That was a little bit of what Kellen Moore and GM Mickey Loomis had to say today at the Saints end of season press conference. And there's a lot of optimism, obviously, around the black and gold right now, winning four of the last five games in the season. You have that rookie quarterback to build upon. And, they got still going to go through the evaluations. You heard them talking about the fact that they're going to take a little break, let things, digest, and then come back in about 10 days and start doing their player evaluations. Before getting ready for NFL draft talk. And I know we've been already dissecting a bunch of stuff with the draft and getting things together, looking at everything. And I don't know, Charlie, to me that for at least draft pieces, I've been all over the board on what I want them to get in the round one. And I don't know, running back is not at the top of my list for that first round pick, no matter how much people keep gushing over the guy Jeremiah Love out of Notre Dame.
Here's what I would say, Steve, and this is super early. I mean, this is January 7th. That we're 3.5 months away from the draft. I mean, we still have Senior Bowl, we still have Combine, we still have all of the pre-draft stuff to do. I've talked with Mike a little bit about this. I like the top three edge rushers. I think any of them would be awesome. And I think they're all going to be top 10 picks. Now, the question is, are they all gone by pick 8? That's where it gets kind of interesting. Top three edge rushers, by the way, as I'm mentioning, Ohio State's Arvell Reese, which is probably going to be the first one off the board. Miami's Reuben Bain, still in the playoffs. You can get to watch him tomorrow night.
I don't know if he'll be around either.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And then David Bailey from Texas Tech.
Possibly, right.
I think there's a drop-off as far as – it's a talented edge class. And once again, very early in the process, we'll talk more about it. It's a really good edge class. But there's a gap after those top three guys, I think. And so if you can get one of those three premier edge rushers, at pick 8, I think you're very happy with it. Then the conversation becomes Jeremiah Love, Caleb Downs. Jeremiah Love, obviously the running back from Notre Dame. Caleb Downs, the safety from Ohio State.
Yeah, I'm big on Caleb, so I lean heavily that way.
There's something about having potentially a safety room of Caleb Downs and Jonas Sanker for the foreseeable future and just not having to worry about that position for like the next decade.
Right.
That's intriguing to me. But is he going to be gone? Steve, with this draft class, the way that it is, I think just like Justin Mello from the Draft Network told us yesterday night when we had our interview with him, the Saints are in a really good spot at 8. There's a drop-off, and it's around 20. So even if they wanted to potentially trade back, which Mickey Loomis never does.
Why,
and
I'm laughing.
We say it every year. Oh, are the Saints going to trade? No, I don't think they're going to because they're in a good spot at pick 8. And if you can land one of those edge rushers, I think you feel really good about yourself. If all three of them are gone by then, you know, you can have the conversation about one of the top receivers because I think three of those are going to go in the top 10 to 12 picks as well. You can have a conversation about Jeremiah Love. You can have a conversation about Caleb Downs, like I mentioned. The one thing is for certain, if Dante Moore, the quarterback from Oregon, enters the class, the top two picks in this draft are going to be quarterback. And I don't think the top two players in this draft are quarterback, which is great news for Saints fans because that means they don't need to worry about QB. You feel good about Tyler Shuck in the future there. And you're going to get one of those top five or six prospects in this class fall into your lap at pick 8. And I think that's why the Saints, like I said, are in a very good spot. And like Justin Mello had said yesterday from the Draft Network, are in a really good spot entering April.
As much as fans might not want to hear about it, I'm curious, like, would the Saints go again in the first round getting an offensive lineman? Because, you know, we've talked about the interior of this O-line, whether it's them getting a guard or them drafting another tackle and moving someone to guard.
Day two.
You don't think first round?
I think if you're using a top 10 pick, unless you're talking about Quentin Nelson, which is, I think, the last top 10 guard. Tyler Booker was kind of close. The Dallas Cowboys drafted him at around 12, I believe, this past year in 2025. But you just don't really spend a top 10 pick on a guard. Now, you could spend day two picks on guards. And I think there might even be a couple guards that go on the back end of day one. But, you know, if you're drafting an offensive line, I guess you would potentially have to move one of Banks or Fuanga again, which I just don't think you're going to do. There's a couple offensive linemen that are going to be up there as well, Steve, that may go ahead of the Saints at pick 9 too, as far as tackles.
Right.
Utah's Spencer Fano, the right tackle, a plug-and-play type of guy. Francis Malgoa from Miami is going to be a top. I think he's probably going to go anywhere from top 5 to top 15, somewhere in that range, 5 to 15. So if those guys go early too, shockingly enough, you're probably going to have one of those top-tier edge rushers fall into your lap at pick 8.